Don, you were on the recent trip with Indiana and Michigan farmers and agribusiness folks to Cuba. Talk to me a little bit about the importance of that potential market as the U.S. works to ease trade and travel restrictions with the country.
Things are starting to open up there, Megan, as you just mentioned. And Indiana thought it was important that we be on the front row and at the forefront of talking to Cuban leaders and learning about the culture, learning what some of the obstacles might be to establish trade with them. There's no doubt the Cuban people need help. They need better diets. They need improved nutrition. So that was very, very apparent to all of us. They're a really friendly nation. I think the whole delegation was just impressed by how open and nice they all were to us, whether that's at the hotel or in restaurants or out in the countryside, wherever we traveled, was very, very impressive. But I just think trade's all about relationships, and it's important that we start that dialogue with the Cubans early on in this process.
When we talk about the potential market in Cuba, what are we looking at for Indiana corn and soybean farmers? Is it just straight export of corn and soybeans, or are there other and potential value-added markets that we can work towards as well?
Great question. I really think, and I was sitting at dinner with the ag person from the Cuban embassy, and I just directly asked him, I said, what can we help you with? What do you need the most of the quickest? And he said, eggs. Well, boy, that set off all kinds of great ideas and thoughts for me. Because Indiana being the third largest egg state, that's something that we could furnish that market very, very easily. They do need protein in their diet. I would think chicken. They eat dark meat chicken as their preferred part of the chicken. And so I think we have an opportunity there to furnish them chicken or even turkey meat. And also there were some discussions about potential pork as well that we're going to follow up on when we're there. And then probably in this initial stage, Purdue had Dr. Marshall Martin with us, and he was looking for opportunities for Purdue to have some internships or some summer study opportunities for students at Purdue, and maybe even to exchange professors with them to start building on that relationship to learn a little bit more. But all those things together, it's going to be a ways down the road. They have to generate income. Of course, we all think about Cuban cigars and Cuban rum as their two largest exports. But I really think one of the things that we saw there, all their fruits and vegetables are organic. And so we're going to have to buy something from them if they have generate income so they can buy something from us. And so if we can get the protocols, safety protocols, the phytosanitary rules in place so we make sure we don't bring any diseases into the U.S. from Cuba, I think there may be an opportunity there for some of that trade with organics.
How can American agriculture maybe help Cuban agriculture continue to develop? We've done it in other countries, but are there ways that we can help maybe with technology and make them more productive and self-sufficient in agriculture as well?
I really do think that might be one of the first things that we can do to assist them, much like you said, in other countries. Fertilizer is not something we used. Everything is hand-weeded, no pesticides of any kind. Their yields suffer because they don't have the best of genetics available in the world today. And so we need to do that in the right way. We need to do it in a win-win way with them. We just don't want to impose U.S. agriculture on the Cubans. That would probably be a big mistake, but we can do it in ways that we could work in partnership with them. I think one of the realizations we found out was, you know, there's no refrigeration there other than in hotels and in the tour bus we were on. There's no air conditioning. So let alone refrigerations and food distribution areas is very rare, if non-existent. And so it's going to have to, whoever goes there will have to set up their own supplies chain from really start to finish to be able to find some way to work with them.
You're running for ASBF president. As you take in this fall, talking to farmers around the country, your trip to Cuba, how does it all work into some of the things that you hope for American Farm Bureau and American agriculture?
Well, that's a good question. Well, if Farm Bureau, American Farm Bureau, has been a leader in trade just forever. It's been one of the main stalwarts of our policy that we think more open trade is better for American farmers. When 96% of the world's population lives outside of our borders, and with yields continuing to increase, we just need to continually expand our markets. We need to work for the fairest trade we can get. We know there'll probably never be free trade, but we always got to keep moving in that direction the best we can. Really, one of the things we know, the WOTUS rule here in the Midwest is a big issue, but as I've talked to farmers and ranchers across the country, it is just as important to them, and they are all concerned about this large land grab that the EPA is undertaking. And so they're worried about that. And then immigration, I think, maybe not as a high of agenda item here in the Midwest, unless you're a fruit and veggie producer or you got a large livestock operation. But there are areas along the coast, North and South Carolina, Florida, Texas, Arizona, California, even all the way up to Oregon and Washington, that there are crops going unharvested, and those farmers and ranchers are really concerned that whether or not they can stay in business if they can't find a stable workforce to be able to harvest and plant their crops.